Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Why is it that every so often a child comes along with a breathtaking gift, able to recite the alphabet at 18 months old or calculate prime numbers at 5 or play Debussy at 6? Where do these children get these abilities from, way beyond that of their peers or even the grown-ups around them? Well, we're exploring the world of child prodigies first up on Nightlife. Maybe you've known one or went to school with one, or maybe you are one. I'd love to hear your story. Maybe you're a parent of one. Is being gifted the same as being a prodigy? And what happens to these children as they grow up? Will they become gifted, even genius adults? To share their thoughts with me, Emeritus Professor of Psychology from Boston College in the US, Professor Ellen Winner, who has written extensively about giftedness in her book, Gifted Children, Myths and Realities. Welcome to Nightlife, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great to have you there. And also with me in our Perth studio is Dr. Alan Thompson, who works with gifted children and has been doing research into artificial intelligence. Hello to you, Alan.
Hi, Indira.
And a bit later, we'll be meeting 18-year-old Noah White, who has some very special gifts that we're going to explore. But first to you and Alan and Ellen, a question for you both. Maybe if I can go to you, Ellen. You've both worked with and studied many gifted children. Can you describe some of the amazing gifts you've come across that some of these children possess?
Well, yes, I can. I have many, many examples. I can tell you about a child who learned to read at age 2 by asking his mother to read to him and point to the words on the page as she read. And she did this for 1 week with one book and another week with another book, all at his request. And then after that, he had just cracked the code of reading. I know of another child who was up speaking before he was a year old, and he was really only about, I can't remember exactly, 7 or 8 months, and his mother would take him to the supermarket and he would start reading the signs on the cereal boxes aloud, and people would think that she was a ventriloquist.
Gosh.
Just yesterday I received from a parent drawings of by her 5-year-old son that will just totally blow your mind. They are black and white pen drawings, highly intricate, highly realistic, of buildings and scenes from all different points of view that he had seen, and all drawn from memory. So those are just a few examples, but the kinds of things that a few very young children can do are really shocking.
Yeah, extraordinary. All right. Well, you've heard those examples, Alan. You work very closely with gifted children. What's some of the extraordinary abilities you've witnessed?
Oh, I love Alan's description of some of the performance, the high performance here in prodigies as being shocking.
Yeah.
And it's so true. Sometimes it's super confronting to have a child reading, you know, as an infant, or creating artwork, prodigious artwork, abstract artwork, or something more specific at 3, 4, 5 years old, being able to solve mathematics where I don't even know the name of the branch, or playing chess. Like, these are really jarring things to see in a young child.
And is there a particular one that stands out for you, Alan, that you've seen and just took your breath away?
Look, all of my clients are fascinating, but I do have to say my favourite prodigy of all time is Alma Deutscher. She's 16 years old at the moment, but when she was 7, she wrote an opera based on Neil Gaiman's short story, Sweeper of Dreams. That's been picked up and has played around the world, and then she's got a second opera that she wrote at 9 called Cinderella. Just seeing her, like listening to her speak at Google, looking at her performance on the violin and piano, there's something very tangible about that. It's very modern. It's not trying to research Mozart or something like that. It's in your face.
Wow, that's extraordinary. Ellen, I mean, just some of the things you've just told me, the both of you just then, I'm just trying to get my head around that, writing operas at that age. Is there an age where this giftedness really comes to the fore, or does it really depend on the child and the particular gift that they've got?
When you say come to the fore, I'm going to take you as meaning shows itself,
yes,
becomes recognized. And I would say that it really depends. Some children show it at a very, very early age. And then there are late bloomers. But let's talk about the ones who show it early. You can see signs of giftedness as young as one or two by the child's intense focus and curiosity and alertness. And by two, in drawing, by two or three, you will find children who start to draw representationally a year before typical children. So I have seen two-year-olds draw pictures of people where you don't see this until age three in a typical child. So you see this in drawing by age two. In terms of language, you see children learning to speak before age one and speaking in complicated sentences before they're even one and a half.
Gosh.
In music, you see them picking out tunes on a piano, for instance, or copying songs by voice that are perfect, making up songs that sound very good on the piano. So you see these things very, very early. You would not see somebody composing an opera at that age, but you would see the components of that, the musicality and the verbal ability at a very early age.
And Eleanor, are these occurrences rare? I mean, what percentage of the population would we be seeing this in?
So, you know, we don't actually have an answer to what percentage of the population, because we would need to have a large scale, like an epidemiological study where you're looking at the percentage of a disease. You would need to be looking at the percentage of prodigies. And this study has not been done, probably because it depends on how gifted you have to be called a prodigy and which domains you're looking at. But I can tell you that it is very rare. I can't tell you how rare, but it is extremely rare.
Ellen, you mentioned about, you know, how gifted needs to be before you're called a prodigy. And this is the tricky bit, because we're living in an era where every parent really thinks their child is pretty special. And we get excited when Johnny can catch a ball when he's still in the cot, or when little Alice can hum a song before she can talk. But when we're talking about gifted or a child prodigy, what level of giftedness does a child need to show?
Well, this is really, it's a definitional question. Where are you going to make the cutoff? David Feldman, who is an expert on prodigies, defined a child prodigy as somebody who displays adult level of competence before the age of 13. That's one definition. You know, I don't know, it could be before the age of 12, could be before the age of 11. I can only tell you that it has to be extreme. So many parents have bright children who are perhaps a year ahead. Prodigies are more than a year ahead. Prodigies are many years ahead by the time they are preschoolers. They're many years ahead of their typical peers. So I can only tell you that it has to be not just a typically bright child, but an extreme child. And when I say bright, that suggests that this is all a matter of IQ. And I don't know if you want to discuss that or not, but a prodigy does not necessarily have a high IQ. It depends on what the domain is.
All right, we'll come to that a bit later, but that's an important point to make. The other term I want to sort of get into is genius. So it's a term bandied about a lot, but where and how do you define genius then, Ellen?
Yes, I don't believe that there is such a thing as a child genius, because my definition of genius is a major big C creator. The great Hungarian psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who just died, made the distinction between little c and big C creativity. And big C creativity has to do with transforming a domain of knowledge. So when Picasso and Braque invented cubism, they transformed painting. Darwin, Newton, Einstein, people who revolutionize a field of knowledge. You cannot do that until you've mastered a domain. And so I think of gifted children as mastering very, very rapidly and without much help from adults a domain that's already been invented. And once they do that, they have the possibility of revolutionizing a domain, but very few gifted children go on to become big C creators. And we can talk about why that later if you want.
Okay. Ellen, if I can come back to you. The other interesting thing, as I posed in the introduction, about nature versus nurture. Where do you sit with this? Is it largely genetics, or is it in the environment that the child is placed in?
It's wonderful that we're still asking this question in 2021. I think all academics and observers even and parents would agree that it's going to be a mix of the two. There's certainly a genetic etiology that's been mapped through prodigies. We know that there's some different advanced brains in place when we're talking about gifted children and prodigies. And of course, that can be completely capped or completely closed if they're not in the right environment. So, no, you can't hothouse a child. You can't bring them up in an environment without that biology, but vice versa. You could easily make not the right decision if you had all the biology there but not the right environment, if they were being held back in school, for instance.
And, Alan, how did you get into this area? Is it because there's a need? Because when a gifted child emerges from a family or a school environment, they do need a different sort of support from the other kids?
Actually, that's not how I got into it. I got into it because my field is the psychology of art, and my focus has been on research in visual arts and literary arts. And I have studied child development in those areas. And as soon as you get into art, you get into the question of talent. People are always talking about it. And so I became interested in the question of the development of artistic talent or artistic giftedness. I don't distinguish between talent and giftedness. And that is what got me interested in giftedness in general.
All right. And Alan, it's my Australian accent because Ellen and Alan sound quite similar.
I know, yes.
if I can go back to you, Alan, because you work very closely with gifted children. How did you come to study in this area?
That's a long story as well. I suppose the short version of it is that I had the luxury of working with very high performers when I was very young. So in my teenage years, I worked with Grammy Award winner Lucky Oceans from Perth here. And then all the way through the performing arts, I found that these high performers had so many different intricate skill sets and different ways of showing up, whether it's resilience or persistence. And I wondered about how we would apply that across many other domains. And that's taken me across the academic field of giftedness and gifted education, as well as applying that through the coaching field, which is now its own department at Harvard.
And Alan, when you work with these children, what are all the situations you come across? Do the parents necessarily realize that their child is gifted?
Well, that's a really great question. We don't know how many children are gifted whose parents don't recognize their gift, and the gift just dies on the vine. As Alan mentioned, it can be just dead if there's no environmental support. But the parents that I work with, of course, all recognize the gift because they come to me and say, look at what my child has done. Is my child gifted? So the parents recognize it, and often they are perplexed. They say, I wasn't like this. My husband wasn't like this. Where did this come from? Something that amuses me is sometimes parents come to me and they say, my child is doing calculus at age 4, knows 4 languages, et cetera, et cetera. Should I have him tested to see if he's gifted? And I always say, you know he's gifted. If the test came out saying he wasn't, you wouldn't believe the test. So the only reason to get your child tested is if you want to get him or her into some special program that requires a test.
Alan in Perth, if I can come back to you, when a parent does think that their child is gifted, there would be some options that parent could then take, because I'd assume there'd be some parents that think, yes, this is something I want to encourage. But there may be other parents who think, now, what sort of path is this going to set my child up for?
Yeah, look, Professor Winner's right that often the academic options and making sure that they're in the right classroom environment is so important. And to get through systems like the Australian education system, it's good to have an IQ assessment for cognitive giftedness. It's good to know about IQ, maybe the same way we might know their height or their weight, and submitting a report just to make sure that they're in the right atmosphere, the right learning environment. Outside of that, there's everything that we could do. You know, they can have mentors around their particular field, whether it's art or geology or whatever they're obsessed with. And of course, a different way of allowing them to understand who they are. So they're specific life skills or their strengths and their talents and their needs. All of that is more important than just saying, great, you've got a big brain. It's way more interesting and way more specific to go and grab that and apply it to their performance.
So, Alan in Perth, how does the Australian education system deal with gifted children?
Well, the department here has a cutoff of about 10% or a cutoff of 10% of cognitive ability. So someone in that 90th percentile or the top 10% of their age peers would be classed using that term gifted. And that allows for options like acceleration or some lesser options like enrichment. And I suppose we're doing quite well in that regard, but there's always room for improvement. And certainly there's been a lot of work through Senate inquiries and different gifted associations around the country in trying to support these children and provide provisions for teachers and parents.
Would you have a rough number of how many children we're talking about who are in the system at the moment?
Oh, look, that's pretty easy. We'd take 7 million people, 7 million children in Australia, and we'd take 10% of that. So there would be 700,000 gifted children under the age of 18 that fit into that 10% bracket. Obviously, exceptionally gifted would be far less than that. We might be looking at 700 or so.
Yeah.
And prodigy, like Professor Winner has mentioned, might be one in a million. We may not even have prodigies in particular fields here in Australia.
Yeah. Have you come across, I mean, you were talking about the young girl and her operas. Would you class her as a prodigy?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you're playing piano and violin at 2 years old and you're composing music from dreams and you're performing in Israel or you're having your opera performed in Israel when you're seven, I mean, there's no argument there. You don't need a report. You don't need any sort of IQ test for that. That's just visible performance.
So how many children like that would we have in Australia?
Well, we've done a number of media case studies, not really academic case studies, but we did the Making Child Prodigies series with ABC a couple of years ago.
Oh, yes.
We did the Child Genius series with GE. And, of course, there was the...
The SBS series.
Child Genius was ABC and Decoding Genius was with GE and was with ABC. And they all look at very high-performing children, but I wonder if that's really... prodigies, because it's got to be super visible. It's got to be something that really whacks you across the face. If you look at someone like William James Sidis, who was considered a prodigy, had an IQ of 300. He was speaking 8 languages while he was 8 years old. Mm. He was operating 2 calculators, you know, one in each hand. These kinds of talent, performance, whatever label you want to apply, is so outrageously visible that there's just no question. So I wonder if we've got those kinds of geniuses here right now, or maybe we're missing them in some of the fields, art, music, maths, chess.
Is there a particular field where you find more of these prodigies, gifted children?
Well, if we use that definition of giftedness just of cognitive ability in the top 10%, there is that flat number. There's 700,000 people or 700,000 children in Australia with that. For prodigies across those different domains, art, music, maths and chess, I would wonder how they are picked up and where they are picked up. Certainly the media are very good at helping out with that, but it's not like teachers are qualified to assess that. And while parents are very good at picking giftedness, they're also not really qualified to assess that. And there's also the concerns with having that public face and allowing the prodigy really to perform at such a high level with all the concerns that we have.
So, Alan in Perth, can you tell me about the young people you work with? How are you trying to help them? What sort of support do you provide?
Of course, yeah. So I don't really try to help at all. We don't even offer advice. So the coaching field out of Harvard Medical School, which hosts the Institute of Coaching, is really about listening. It's about allowing the child to draw on their own wisdom. So as part of that, we're listening to who they are. How do they learn? What learning modalities do they apply? We actually use Professor Winner's husband's assessment in my platform. We use Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences as a way of viewing outside of logic and outside of what we might normally consider to be smart, how else might they be intelligent, and giving them a different view into how they might show up in the world. And then no agenda. There's no script in my sessions. They come in and speak about whatever they'd like. They might talk about friendship. They might talk about challenges at home or at school. And it's really fascinating. Every session is completely different.
Hmm. Ellen, I'll come to you now. These children, how do they see their giftedness? Do they recognize it? Does it make them feel different?
Yes, that's a great question. They do recognize it and they do feel different. And they tend to want to be with older children whose skill levels may be somewhat closer to theirs. And they often feel very isolated. I studied one child who he was a drawing prodigy, and he used to invite friends to come over after school. But it turned out all he wanted to do was have them pose for him so that he could draw them. These children are obsessed. They have what I call a rage to master. It's all they want to do is develop their skill in their domain of high ability. And because of that, they're not like other children. And they can often feel lonely. And I would say that the higher the gift, the more the child is at risk for loneliness. And we have a number of programs in the United States for gifted children to come, for instance, in the summer, several weeks, and residential programs. And they may now start as young as fourth or fifth grade, 9 or 10 or 11. And the most important thing these children get out of being in these programs is to find other kids like themselves so they don't feel alone. And of course, now with the internet, they can connect to other kids like themselves. And I think that's very important.
This is Nightlife with Indira Naidu, and I'm chatting to Emeritus Professor Ellen Winner and Dr. Alan Thompson about gifted children. Do you have one in your family? Ellen, you mentioned this rage to master that gifted children become really obsessed with. How does that manifest itself?
Well, these children just want to do one thing and over and over and over again. So, for instance, the drawing prodigy that I just told you about, he would wake up in the morning and start drawing in bed. He would draw during breakfast. He would draw during school, and he got in trouble for that. And as I said, he invited kids over so that he could draw them. Kids who are music performers, they will willingly practice their instrument for hours. And you know how hard it is to get a typical child to practice.
Yeah, like me and piano. Yep.
I would say they're obsessed with working in their area of high ability. And one of the reasons that they keep doing it is because they get joy out of it because they learn so quickly in it. So they get a kind of flow, if I can use the terminology of the late, great Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who just died, who invented the word flow. Mm. They get flow out of working in their high area because they learn so quickly and so rapidly. And another thing is they learn without much adult scaffolding. They really need very little. Remember the child who learned to read by asking his mother to read to him one book for 1 week and another book for another week, and that was it. And after that, he took off on his own. Very little adult help is needed. They figure things out on their own.
And Ellen, what happens when a parent doesn't understand this gift or maybe feels even threatened by it? Have you come across that?
I remember a child in my son's elementary school who was an incredible artist. He could just draw anything. And his father was an immigrant and was a taxi driver and was very concerned that his child, you know, become able to develop skills that would support him in life and be successful. And I told the father what a great artist his son was. And he said, I just want him to be good at math. And so I felt that was very sad because the parents didn't recognize the artistic abilities and didn't value it. So I know that this child is not an artist now as an adult. I think he's doing good work, but he certainly is not an artist. I don't know whether he should have been an artist, but it was sad to me that his parents didn't value that. And I'm sure that that happens a lot. But usually parents are so thrilled that their child is doing something so amazing that they are often accused of boasting. Some parents are accused of having used memory cards for their flashcards for their children, and that's why their child is so advanced. And the parents will say, I didn't push my child. I'm running after my child, try to keep up with my child. So it's kind of a myth to think that the parents are pushing the kids and making these child prodigies. These child prodigies emerge, and parents are trying to figure out what to do with them.
I'd now like to welcome into our conversation Noah White. He's an 18-year-old, a gifted person, a prodigy, who I understand has worked with Dr. Alan Thompson. Noah, welcome to Nightlife.
Hello.
Great to have you. So, Noah, obviously you've been listening to this conversation. What about what we've been discussing resonated with you and your experiences?
I think the early learning part of the conversation was really interesting to me because I remember I learned to read really early on and I became obsessed with it, like Ellen and Alan were talking about. And I think I was reading from like 5 years old until I was like pretty much last year. And I have read so much and I can read very fast and very efficiently nowadays. So I think that was an example of what they're talking about.
Now, I understand, Noah, if we compare your intelligence to, you know, the general population, you're in the top 0.3 percentile. Do you feel gifted?
It's an interesting question because I definitely felt that something was different for a very long time and I didn't really know what it was. And I only recently found out when I was in year, I believe, 10, at the end of year 10, I was told that I was gifted and it kind of made sense. It kind of aligned in my mind because I was like, I realized that all this time it was nothing to do with me and it wasn't to do with the environment I was in. It was to do with my brain and the way that everything worked. But at the same time, over time since then, I've realized that it also was the nurture part as well. And I feel like I learned a lot from the way I was brought up.
All right. So, Noah, how would you describe your exceptional abilities that you have?
I'm very much art and English based. I'm not a mathematically gifted mind at all, but I love art. I love all kinds of art. I love drawing. I love painting. I love sculpture. I love writing. It's honestly my thing because I align with creativity in a very personal way. It's just what I love to do. So, yeah.
And when did your family notice that you had these unusual gifts?
I believe that my mother talked about how she realized that I was gifted because of the reading and also because I would often pick up conversation with adults and try and talk to them as a young child. And she thought that that was strange at the time, but eventually realized that that was just normal. And I've always been like that. I've had a lot of experiences where I've had some really deep and meaningful conversations with adults when I was like 10 or 11 or 12. And yeah, it's been genuinely enriching.
You don't sound like the average 18-year-old. That's for sure that I would chat to normally on my radio show. So gradually your parents understood that you were exhibiting these really unusual abilities. How was the rest of your life? How was your school life? How did your school friends respond?
I had an interesting school experience. To go into as little detail as possible, I moved into 7 different schools, all varying different environments and teaching and students. And I feel as if majorly it was positive, but at the same time, the negative experiences I will remember for the rest of my life. Yeah. And it really does impact how I approach things nowadays, I would argue. But yeah, I don't know.
And, why did you move around so much, Noah?
I think the biggest thing that was brought up whenever I asked that question was my parents wanted the best for me. And they said to me very early on, we don't care about the cost or the anything like that. What we care about is what's best for you and finding the right environment for you. And we made a lot of hard decisions along the way. Like I remember there was a very particular experience where in year 7, I came to my parents myself and I said to them, I am not thriving, I'm just surviving. That was the exact phrase I said to them. And I think that was a turning point for us because we realized that the school system wasn't really serving our needs at all, and my needs especially, because I wasn't feeling enriched and I wasn't gaining anything from it. And so eventually I did settle in a place where I was happy, But yeah, it was a long, long journey to get there.
Yeah, you said that there were some really difficult periods for you, some upsetting times. Can you tell me about some of those in terms of, you know, how you were treated maybe by the other kids?
A lot of social issues, in that bullying was rife, a big part of it. Although I think bullying takes a much more insidious form when you're aware of what's happening, especially as a young child, you realize the motivations behind why people are like they are. And that really does affect how you approach things. Like, a big thing that I had when I did those tests so long ago was that I had a really high level of awareness. Mm. And so that really did affect how I approached social relationships with people, because they would just, I would be aware of why they would act the way they would act. And I would be angry at them, because I'd be like, why can't you change? Why can't you see the reason why you're like this? And then it clicked in my mind eventually that they actually can't. And it's just a thing that they live with and they aren't aware of until they later in life. It's an interesting conversation to have, actually, but yeah.
I'm speaking to 18-year-old Noah White. We're talking about giftedness and prodigies on Nightlife tonight, and Noah has some exceptional skills in English and art. So, Noah, when the bullying, you know, got bad, did you ever get to a point where you thought, I wish I didn't have these gifts?
I went through that period of time before I knew about the fact that I was gifted. So the hardest part of that time, that year that I was going through the worst side of the bullying, I eventually did homeschooling for a month. That's actually where I met Alan. And I also met a lot of really fantastic mentors and tutors who made me love learning again and love doing things for creativity and doing things outside of school and the system.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So it must have been just such a godsend when you and Alan were introduced to each other.
Yeah, like I was looking for somebody to talk to about why I was like the way I was. And I feel like there was a couple people that helped me along the way. Alan was one of them. Michelle Thompson was another one. There was a lot of really powerful people that I met who were very knowledgeable in the field that they were in. I mean, hearing this conversation tonight has made me realize that I need to do the research myself, because it sounds very, very, very interesting.
And what are you up to now, Noah? Tell me about how you're using these abilities.
So I am currently working in the digital space. I'm doing game design, art and animation and design elements. I am working at a private college called AIE in Sydney, and I'm basically studying how to make video games and how to create interactive experiences, because I feel as if interactive experiences especially are the future for learning and also creativity, because they are the, in my mind, the genuinely an evolution to movies and TV shows and reading and writing.
And Noah, if there are parents of gifted children or teachers that have gifted children in their classes who are listening tonight, what messages would you like them to take away from this chat?
I think that gifted children are an interesting question, because they are both powerful and not powerful at all. I am very much a human being. I have made a lot of mistakes, and I feel as if giftedness is not an excuse to ignore those mistakes. And my message would be, treat them like they are your son or your daughter, because they are your son or your daughter. And they have just as much trouble in life as you do. And they may get things quicker than you do, but in reality, they will learn if you teach them. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Don't forget about that.
Very good advice. Ellen, can I come to you now in terms of the number of children that potentially, you know, aren't getting their potential fully realised? There must be a number of children falling into these cracks.
Absolutely. There have to be. the domains where you see giftedness emerge early on tend to be very rule-governed domains, like chess, like realistic drawing, mathematics or arithmetic, and musical performance. And those are typically recognized, but imagine a child who is musically talented, but whose parents aren't interested in music and is never given an instrument or the chance to learn music. That child will go unrecognized. And imagine also, the culture is also really important. Imagine a child born with the ability to be a genius at chess or to be highly gifted at chess is born into a culture that's never heard of chess. Well, that child is not going to go on to be an amazing chess player. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a kind of coordination between the gift that the child has and the culture and the family's recognition of it. And we have no idea how many children are falling through the cracks. There is the famous story of the Indian mathematician Ramachandran, who was a huge prodigy in mathematics, but he was growing up in a culture where he was not actually given access to the latest findings in mathematics. And so by the time he was recognized as a young adult and went to England to study with the great mathematicians, he was already behind because he hadn't had the proper exposure to, so he had kind of invented Western math on his own, but he hadn't been exposed to that kind of math, so that he was way behind. So the culture is very important too.
Catherine in Waverley, good evening to you.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Catherine. Tell me about your brush with a gifted child.
Okay, I've got two children, my daughter and my son. When my son was born, he was probably about 6 months old, and he used to always be hanging around my feet in the kitchen on the floor. And so I pulled out a couple of pots, a couple of chopsticks, or spoon, and I just let him tap on the pots. And he just tapped and tapped and loved it and loved it and loved it. And all he ever wanted to do was tap. My son and my husband were separated now, divorced, but he is a musician, very famous guitarist. So there was music in the house all the time. And it was back in the 70s, early 60s. So in those days, there was just musicians coming in and out of the house. So we saw that he was very, very interested in he had the ability to drum. All he wanted to do was tap. So we got a tiny little drum kit, not a little crappy one. They built a little drum kit for him. Mm. And by the age of a year and a half, two, he was sitting at the drum kit playing it. And then everyone's going, this kid's a genius, he's unbelievable, something's going to happen with this. Well, life went on. And he went to school, and he wasn't terrific in school because he couldn't concentrate. All he wanted to do was play music. So eventually he used to sit in the garage for hours on end, for 8 hours, just listening to all my husband's music and all the old music from, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And he today is now probably one of the most famous, a very, very famous drummer.
Is
he's 49 years of age. Yeah. Yes, he's very famous. And he's just an amazing drummer.
The
ability to drum is quite difficult because you're going, your hands are moving at a different rate, you're hitting something else, your feet are going at the same time. And the thing is, he had an ability to do all those sort of things, but he's not a very good speller. He's a phonetic speller.
Yeah, but he's an amazing drummer. Catherine, thank you so much. I'm going to have to leave it there because we're coming up to news time. Again, another example of, you know, just a kid seeing a pot and chopsticks and realising, yes, and now made a career out of drumming. Another extraordinary story. Well, thank you very much for joining us in a chat about gifted children and prodigies tonight. It's been a fascinating discussion. I think we'll all be much more tuned in to it after hearing some of your stories. So thank you very much to my guests, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Boston College, Ellen Winner. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Alan Thompson, a life architect who's joining us from Perth. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks so much, Indira.
And Noah White. Thank you, Noah, for sharing your story and some of the difficult moments through your childhood. But it sounds very exciting where you are now. So we're looking forward to seeing where it's going to take you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Noah.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.